Let there be peace among us, and let us not be part of our own or another's oppression. Please be seated. Good morning, church. When I was a child, my parents and I would drive out to my great aunt Jessie's and great uncle Seward's place in the country. We were usually accompanied by my cousin, my aunt, and my grandparents. It was a place where my cousin and I were pretty predictable in our actions. First, we would stop in the kitchen to see if Aunt Jessie was going to make rolls. I was always excited when I saw the large beige earthenware mixing bowl covered with a damp dish towel. My cousin and I were given instructions on what fresh vegetables were to be picked for dinner. Kentucky Wonder Beans, corn, tomatoes, lettuce, to name a few. Returning from our outdoor market, my cousin and I then took a walk down the dirt road to Mr. and Mrs. Mack's house. The Mack's had a real farm, complete with barn and animals. Mr. Mack would ride us around on his tractor and let us feed the chickens. Mrs. Mack would treat us to fresh squeezed lemonade and homemade chocolate chip cookies. Quite satisfied, I would then run back to the house, as what I really wanted to do was to punch down the dough for the rolls. I remember my Aunt Jessie saying, "Give it a good punch," and my hand was lost in the dough that surrounded it. She would then take the back of a dinner knife and scrape the dough off my hand. I would watch her intensely knead the dough. She had arthritis of the hand, and I never grasped the full weight of how difficult a task that this might be. She rolled the dough out on a wooden board that she had spread flour on, and taking a drinking glass, dipped the rim of the glass into the flour, where she would then cut circles of dough to form the rolls. She would then pick up each circle and fold over the top third. Then placing each roll carefully on a greased baking sheet, the remaining dough would be gathered and the process repeated until there were two full pans of rolls. Another rise, then brushed with melted butter and placed in the oven. The house smelled wonderful. It was as a young child that I learned that making bread was an act of love. Over the years, I have made yeast bread, but nothing has ever equated my Aunt Jessie's rolls. But I continue to hold my truth that the making of bread is an act of love. My current love for bread baking came after I read Michael Pollan's book, Cooked, A Natural History of Transformation. Bread in the modern context, as we have come to know it, is the result of the advent of roller mills that made white flour widely available and of the commercialization of yeast in the 1880s. While it made life easier, it took much of the nutrition out of the bread and made bread commercially available for purchase. It was a staple of the dinner table in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, predictable in color and pretty tasteless. It had preservatives, so it had a long shelf life. It must be noted that for most of European history, bread represented more than half the calories in the diet of the peasantry and urban poor, according to French historian Fernand Braudel. But if you ask any 2001 pandemic bread maker, they will tell you time and time that the making of bread is an act of love. My friend Julie gifted me with starter yeast a few years ago. Since then, I have tended, fed, and used the yeast to make bread. Now, this act of love hasn't been easy. And at many times, it appears one-sided in the yeast's favor. Yeast has popped out of the containers, moved in mysterious ways along the kitchen counter, and made its way to the floor. only to expand in the process of doing this. And Julie says, I'm doing it right. Bread baking is a gift of love and an abundant, life-giving, and sustaining gift. So when Jesus says, I am the bread of life, are we looking at Jesus as boring factory-made bread? What comes to mind when you hear, I am the bread of life? Perhaps some of us will think of the bread that we use for communion. In most Episcopal and Anglican churches, to commemorate the Lord's Supper, we use the communion wafer. It's easy, it's convenient. It comes in a resealable, airtight container of 500, and it has no resemblance to the taste of bread. Is this the bread of life to which Jesus has likened himself to? Today's gospel reading begins with Jesus' proclamation, I am the bread of life. Earlier, we read the story that has been known as the feeding of the 5,000, where many hungry people are fed because there was love and sharing and enough for all. The focus of this feeding story has been on the meal, and very little attention has been paid to the bread itself and what it might signify. In the same way that the focus on mass feeding has been on the miracle and not on the food itself, so too with today's proclamation that Jesus is the bread of life, we usually focus our attention on Jesus and not on the bread. But how can we begin to understand what Jesus is saying about himself until we look more closely at the bread? When Jesus talks about the bread, he is looking about a community that is all-inclusive. All-inclusive means all-inclusive, because if we don't include all, we place restrictions on the way we live our life in the world. We get predictable bread. When I visited South Africa a few years ago, I was introduced to a rich, dense bread they called seedloaf, boasting different seeds and grains, which yield a loaf of complex texture and rich flavor. This is how it's described on the market's website. Seedloaf, our healthiest loaf, is hearty and moist, made from white flour, whole wheat flour, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, flax seeds, bran, sunflower oil, and honey and yeast. This is definitely the sort of bread evoked in Jesus' claim, I am the bread of life. The passage from John's gospel is a lesson about love, belief, and abundance. It's difficult to associate mass-produced bread with the actual kneading and baking of a loaf of bread. We are all accustomed to a huge aisle devoted to bread at our local market. Abundance, yes, not much of anything else. Consider Berkshire Mountain Bakery in Western Massachusetts. A small bakery, Berkshire Mountain, makes its own yeast and uses only fresh milled flour. They have a sort of cult bready following. One can order cheese and herb bread, cherry pecan, ciabatta, dark chocolate, jalapeno and cheese, peasant French pan, and spelt bread. Visiting the bakery is a bread Disneyland. Driving through small towns in Western Mass, getting confused by my GPS, I was on a mission to search out and buy real bread. And when I finally arrived, I stood in front of a small wall of daily selection, speechless and mouth ajar. Here I was with real bread, food for the soul, handmade, made with care, and made with love. When the bread is sold out for the day, there's no going to the back of the bakery to retrieve additional loaves. And this bread is not arranged in colorful plastic sleeves. Our lives, our families, and our friends are enriched with a diversity of likes and dislikes, so why not our bread? And to turn that around, when Jesus spoke of himself of bread as the bread of life, is it possible he was speaking of richness, a texture of boldness and flavor, that he was inviting us to a greater feast in our life of faith? Now, if we continue on with the reading, we have those who aren't quite sure about Jesus' claim of who and whose he is. So I'm going to start with a phrase, the crowd began to complain. I have been blessed with my elders sharing their stories of struggle and triumph. In my own family, my fraternal grandfather moved north for the promise and fulfillment of a good job at Ford Motor Factory. The pay was good and steady and moved many African Americans into the middle class. My father's older brothers went to work at Ford. However, my father, after his few first months of working at Ford as a welder, was pulled aside by a fellow auto worker who said, "Oliver, this work's not for you. Go to college." It was a few weeks later that my father fell off a scaffolding and was given the time and space to consider his career path. He chose to go to college and was initially met with a community that wasn't sure how a college education was going to lead to steady employment and to support a family. Many a neighbor said, "You know Wyatt and Christine's child, dot, dot, dot. He's going to college. He thinks he's better than us. Who does he think he is?" My father received a PhD and encouraged his younger brothers to obtain a college degree and started the STEM program to encourage and educate youth to explore careers in computer science and engineering. We have all known a person or two or three in our lives who said, "You know what so-and-so's child is doing, dot, dot, dot." Do we say this in disbelief? Or do we say that in amazement for the blessings that have been given to that person? This is not an old conversation. The writer of John knew the people that they were speaking to and knew the questions on their hearts and minds. Jesus was baking something new, creating the yeast that would break from the plastic container onto the counter and flow onto the kitchen counter and onto the floor and carried out the door to feed the people of God. The vision of bread given to us in John's gospel teaches us that we will be fed, that we are enough, that we are love. The bread of life and the love Jesus proclaims that whoever believes will have everlasting life. So what does this love look for us? To eat the bread of life and love means that communities come together to have conversations about their differences and to support each other when forms of racial hatred are expressed in their community. To eat the bread of life and love is to check our privileges at the door and to stop for a moment to let the Holy Spirit into our hearts and into our thoughts. To eat the bread of life and love is to have compassion for one another, even under the most difficult of circumstances. To eat the bread of life and love means we struggle and wiggle in comfortable and in uncomfortable conversations with each other of differing opinions, and we stay present. To eat the bread of life and love means we don't discount, belittle, or shame the other, as we are all the other at times. To break real bread is messy. Crumbs fall everywhere. Bread broken by hand is never even, but there is a joy and a love in the sharing with others. Breaking bread is beautiful. Breaking bread is messy. Breaking bread is comforting. Breaking bread is an amazing act of love. Let us break bread together on our knees or at our table or when we encounter the other or one another daily in our journey. Amen.